Welcome to Q&A with TNK. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A.
With TNK, I'm Kristen.
I'm Tiffany.
Hi.
Hey.
What's our question?
Hey. Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Our question today comes from Savannah in Oregon. Mm-hmm. It says,
hi, Savannah.
Have you ever fallen out of love with an early childhood theory or practice that you once supported? Follow-up question, of course, is what caused you to change your mind?
Hmm. Okay. So I hear, you know, we've all heard about breaking up with things we used to do, like in our old before playful learning days. Mm-hmm. But now, like, Tiffany and I are challenging ourselves to think of things that we maybe have broken up with in our after playful learning days that we know is, very much supported in a playful learning environment, but just isn't working.
Yeah.
Or believe it. Like, we just don't agree.
Yeah. Our last conversation was about free-range nap and free-range snack.
Yep. And a little bit of timeout was in there.
Oh, yeah. But timeout isn't, I don't think that's a playful practice that we broke up with.
Well, maybe it's just like a respectful caregiving. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say, my number one is this idea that playful learning is the answer to all education problems. I used to think that if everybody knew about playful learning and it's so good for kids and there's all this research that supports it, so if the whole public school system just flipped and was focused on playful learning instead of the top-down teacher and teacher-led model that seems to be prevailing now, that everything would be fixed.
Right.
And I don't think that anymore.
Yeah.
And the thing that actually changed my mind was Discovering the Culture of Childhood by Emily Plank.
Hmm. I haven't read the whole thing yet. I've started
I haven't either.
Oh.
But within the first chapter. I had this realization that different cultures, and not just talking like broad scale, but like different pocket cultures within any given community feel differently about different things. Just like we need to look at childhood as its own cultural group, we should maybe start thinking about playful learning as a cultural group.
Yeah.
And when you support it, and the families that are in your program support it, it's magical and beautiful and works.
Yeah.
And when you as a teacher support it, but nobody else does that's in your program, it's not going to work the same way.
Yeah.
It's not going to look like this idealized playful learning model because you're missing that entire culture of your community.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are circumstances where I don't think playful learning is the answer to all the problems anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's more this this need to embrace different styles of learning that work for different people.
Exactly.
And we believe that play-based learning, and there's science to back up a lot of what we do. That's what drew me to it in the first place.
Right. That playful learning is good for many people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it should be more common.
Mm-hmm.
And focused on more heavily in schools, because in my mind that the new answer to the problems with public education is that we don't embrace more philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that one philosophy is right, because at the end of the day, play-based education is a philosophy of education.
It totally is.
And it's not that philosophy is right.
Right.
It's that the people who do it, believe in it.
Right.
And back it up with science. But everybody can back stuff up with science.
Yeah. So it is. It's why is public education so still stuck in the industrialized revolution? Like, why yeah. are we still doing this total factory style model of education?
Mm-hmm. When we've learned about play-based education, Montessori yeah. education, Waldorf education.
But so why is it still the number one and often viewed as the only good
yeah.
way? The yeah. only way to do it. And if you do anything different, mm-hmm. whoa.
Mm-hmm. In my
you're
dream,
weird.
In my dream public school,
mm-hmm.
this is different than the dream school that I've talked about.
Okay.
This is the dream public school.
Okay.
There is a classroom that represents each philosophy. And each family can be in the classroom that fits that philosophy.
Wow.
Best.
Wouldn't that be magical?
Wouldn't that be? Or if, like, you have a kid who just seems like they are gelling with Reggio,
mm-hmm.
put him in the Reggio room.
Yeah. Or
you have a kid who loves direct instruction and just wants to workbook all day.
Put him there.
Put him in the
workbook room.
In the workbook room. But if that's where your child is thriving, put them there.
Yeah.
Don't force them to be something that they don't want to be.
Right. And so this is like something I've been thinking a lot about. So my son, who's 9, you hear me talk about him all the time, who he has anxiety and we think he has dyslexia. I've learned... And I'm a little scared for his next adventure because I've learned that anxiety follows you everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not, and I thought it was very much caused by school. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like that is where a lot of the anxiety, that's what it revolves around. Not really about a lot of other things. That's the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
Switch him from public school to private school so he can be in a class of 13 kiddos and he can get a little bit of help for his dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
And he still has the heightened anxiety in that setting as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's still many days where he doesn't want to go to school and he won't talk about it. And now the new adventure is school that I've been working on with some other moms in our community, and it's called Evergreen Community School, and he wants to switch to that school, which is much more of a child-led, project-based learning environment.
Mm-hmm.
There's still going to be instances of, you know, math instruction and things like that, but, you know, reading and writing and history, social studies, sciences will all be wrapped up into projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry, like, is it going to be a good fit for him? Is anything ever a good fit for him?
Yeah.
Because his anxiety is going to follow him. We got to get to the root of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, does this fit into the whole, what you were talking about, what you were speaking to? I don't know.
I think it does. Because you're in a position now, it's not that the play-based or the project-based is going to fix him.
Exactly.
Is that the best environment for him?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you believe in.
Right.
At the end of the day, it either is or it isn't for that individual child.
Right. I just wish there was a lot more choice in our community as far as what's available.
Yeah.
And I wish that the choice was widely accepted.
Yeah. Did you...
Yeah.
I'm laughing because my husband is going, he's got his work clothes on and he's right outside the window here digging a ditch today. He came in, Chris, in between episodes, he was like, well, I think I'm going to dig a ditch. Okay, honey, go for it.
It's funny.
Country life.
So
are there any other theories that you've been on board with and now broken up with?
Theories I've been on board with and broken up with. I don't know.
I have another one. I'm ready. I'm waiting in the wings.
You say it.
I used to, I don't know if this is necessarily a theory, but I used to feel like I had to bring new things into the room all of the time in order to make it a high quality environment. In order to make it like a good play-based environment, I felt like I had to be plopping something every day. I had to be bringing something new in. Hey, what new art supply are we going to use today?
Right.
And it felt lazy to not do that.
Right.
Like I wasn't providing the children with enough choice or enough chances to experiment. But I've since been able to reflect, and being pregnant has made me have a lot less energy.
Yeah.
But this year has really shown me that having extended time with one thing is equally valuable.
Totally.
As long as it's a choice. You know what I mean? It's not just like, well, I don't like rotating toys anymore, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
It's, I can tell that we're not done with this yet, so we're just going to keep it out.
Right.
Or I can tell that we're getting close to done with this. Can I dump it in a bin with shaving cream to give it an extra? Yeah. How can I make this thing that's familiar new?
Right.
As opposed to how can I make everything new all the time?
New all the time. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that. It's okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is not to say don't do anything new with your kids.
Right.
But make it a decision.
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to think of like things. Okay, so maybe here's something that kind of is a revolving wheel where I think it's important, like, so I do it and then I back off a little while and then I feel like it becomes important again. And I feel like it's kind of the thing where, why do we always have to feel like we have to prove ourselves to our parents and our community?
Mm-hmm.
And there's times where, like, I'm totally on, you know, writing everything they're learning under every single picture. And then there's times where I'm like, or having outside sources saying, why do we need to do this? Like, why do we need to prove ourselves? Like, they chose your program for a reason.
Yeah.
You don't need to do that all the time. Don't waste your time, like, putting the proof there all the time. But then you hear things like, oh, so-and-so said their child wasn't ready for kindergarten when they left Butterfly Hill. So then I start to do it again. Like, now I need to prove to you that, like, what is school readiness? Do you know what that term means? So since you maybe don't know, I'm going to tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Or the word structure, this is my newest one. Like, why does everybody say that they want a program with more structure? So I'm going to tell you what structure is.
Yeah.
And what it looks like in our program. So, yeah. I don't know. I go back and forth with, like, breaking up with it and then getting back together with it. And then breaking up with it and getting back together. And I think that is something that's just going to always happen.
Yeah.
As long as playful learning is a philosophy of teaching and learning, we're going to have to, like, show people what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know if it makes sense.
I'm following you.
I maybe didn't word it correctly. As long as it's maybe looked at as a philosophy of teaching and learning that is inferior, maybe.
Yeah.
To the industrialized, teacher-directed style of learning, then we're going to have to, like, prove it.
Yeah. Ooh. Another one that kind of goes along with that is the teaching as an art versus teaching as a science.
Mm.
I go back and forth between that.
Okay.
And that's not necessarily a
break up
childhood
with
theory or practice or break up with. But it's like I oscillate between those two frequently, because it's like I can't decide which side I'm on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you have to pick a side.
I don't know if I've ever even thought about this.
Okay.
So to explain it to me.
This there's like two ends of the spectrum. Travis Taggart brought it up on Heather's podcast, Cause and Effect. That early childhood nerd. If you don't listen to it, you should.
Oh. Natasha.
But this idea that, like, somewhere on that spectrum between art and science, each teacher lies. And teachers on the art side are, you know, you, like, use your intuition to do what feels right and the creativity and it's all about feeling, right? Okay. And then if you're on the science end, it's like, well, this is what science says is best for kids. I did this experiment and it showed me this. I did these assessments and it showed me this data. This is where I need to focus myself. And I go back and forth between this idea that there's like an art or a craft to teaching. And that there's also a concrete, better method that you can prove somehow.
Right.
Right now I'm kind of on the art end of things.
Yeah.
I used to be very much on the science end of things as a science person.
I think I'm more on the science end.
Yeah.
And I think that that has a lot to do with, like, the creation of Evergreen Community School. Like, I mean, the underlying thread that runs through it is that we learn when we're curious and when... But maybe that's more art. I don't know. I know that... I know how the brain works. I know... when information sticks. So that's science.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do. We're going to, whatever you're curious about, whatever you wonder about, that's what we're going to grab onto and run with.
Yeah. But yeah, it's that in between.
Yeah.
Because science is all about the measurable outcomes, right? So like, how are you going to prove that it's better?
Right, right.
How do you prove something like that?
I know.
You just feel it. You feel like this so feels right.
Art. Yeah.
Or like, this is where I get stuck sometimes. I'm studying for a test.
You are right now?
No.
Oh.
In theory.
Okay.
I'm studying for a test.
What are you going to school for?
This. I'm going to not do the thing that science says, oh, this is the best way to learn material quickly. I'm going to do the thing that feels right.
Right.
Whether or not the measurable outcome is a better grade on the test. Maybe test isn't a good example. Like, why am I taking a test in the first place? But, I'm going to gravitate towards the style of learning that works best for me based on my experience.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the one that everybody else says I should try.
Right.
Like, if you read for 15 minutes every day from your textbook instead of reading the whole chapter at once, you'll retain more information.
Right.
It doesn't feel right to me.
Right.
Also, I'm using terrible examples.
That's funny. Okay. Do we feel like we've spent enough time?
Yeah.
Tell me something good. All right, I got something good.
Ooh, bring it on.
Okay. The other day, this has nothing to do with what we've talked about, but it's just funny.
That's what this is for.
Okay. it's winter in Minnesota, but when you hear this podcast, it's going to be summer.
Might be winter again.
It might be winter again. And it's freezing cold. And we go to forest school. And forest school teacher, Alex, she's 22. Maybe 23. I can't keep track of how old she is. That's horrible. So a kid is like, I have to go poop. And I'm like, oh, great. We did not bring a toilet.
Oh, no.
We kind of ended up in a spot where we just didn't expect to be that far away. And then we were. And he had to poop. So I was like, Alex, you want to take him over there and help him poop in the woods? And she's like, okay. So then she goes, they're gone, probably for about 10 minutes. I can see them through the woods, kind of like a little bit. And she comes back and I go, she's got like a Ziploc bag full of poopy toilet paper. And I go, how's that? And she goes, that was slightly horrifying, but a very good learning experience. And I was like, in what way? She's like, well, it was completely disgusting. But I learned something. What did you learn? She's like, I learned how to teach a kid how to poop in the woods. He taught me. She's like, he taught me that his mom taught him this, and I had no idea, and I didn't either. You grab onto two branches, and you lean back.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
That's not how you pee in the woods?
No, I've always squatted, and now I know this.
You gotta do the lean, girl.
How come nobody ever taught me that?
I don't know.
I had no idea. And she didn't either, obviously. So now we have this whole technique of teaching children how to poop or pee in the woods.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. And then also, nope, that was a different day. There was a day where we got in the van. It would have been an exhausting day at forest school. It was the day I probably talked about it when the reporter came out to the woods. Mm. And there was a kid pooping on a bucket. And there was kids naked in the woods and all these things. And
best we got day back ever,
in,
you mean?
Yeah, we got back in the van and she's like, is this what it's like to have kids? And I was like, no, it's 75 times worse. With your own children. Like, scared her from having kids forever.
Oh, all right, gosh.
What's your something good?
My something good is, I love Brussels sprouts.
Really?
And my friend Kyle has a deep fryer.
Yeah.
And we decided to deep fry some Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe the greatest way to eat Brussels sprouts ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Why don't people always deep fry Brussels sprouts and serve them that way?
I don't know.
They're so good.
Interesting. Do you put like a coating around them?
I think we battered them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Huh.
Yeah. Do a little like egg flour.
Yeah.
You didn't have to pre-steam them or anything. You just pop them in the deep fryer.
And they were good.
And they were so good. Interesting. I'm still thinking about them.
Oh my gosh.
Months later, they were so good.
Oh. All right.
That's my something good.
Awesome. Well, Tiffany.
I'm hungry, I guess. Well, Kristen.
It's been fun.
We'll see you next time on Q&A.
With T&K.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been Q&A with T&K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.